At Media 2007 podcast, hosted by Titan Internet, supporting At Media Ajax, taking place in London on the 19th and 20th of November.
Wow, another year, another At Media. This presentation is going to be slightly different to the ones that you might have seen me do before, not in the fact that it's unscripted and unrehearsed. But in the fact that this particular presentation isn't me usually, as I usually do, stomping around the stage telling people my own opinions, this presentation kind of opens up more questions, I hope, than it certainly gives answers. I think it was 2005, just before the first At Media, that I asked a question on my website, because I was beginning to become a little bit more interested in what it was that was making British design distinctive, or what could make British design distinctive. And John Hicks was talking about this a little bit earlier on. And I asked a particular question, because as well as being, you know, fascinated and passionate about web design, I'm fascinated and passionate about other things as well. And I'm passionate about car design. I don't happen to have a very nice car, but you know, I am passionate about particularly, you know, old vintage British sports cars. But I also like the cut of continental suits, and I like Italian shoes. And I like the differences that I seem to see when we look at design elements of all sorts of different things from across the world. And I wondered, in fact, whether or not we were seeing that on the web. And that's really the subject of today's presentation. So I asked the question, you know, what do we see? Where on the web is that quintessential Englishness that might have been perhaps Morgan sports cars or MG? Or that kind of Gallic flavor that was classic kind of Citroën cars, you know, the De Chauveur. And I don't know the name of the model of that particular one, that the Citroën that looked like a shark. But a wonderful kind of heritage in terms of car design. And I wasn't really seeing that, I didn't think, in terms of the work that was coming out of British designers on the web, or in fact from other places. So I made a statement, which was that I hope that British web designers can escape from under the smothering influences of what I thought was American-flavored globalized design. So that was kind of strong stuff, I thought, at the time. Just a quick show of hands. Who here is from the UK? Oh, so vast majority. Who else is here from elsewhere in Europe? Okay, so, not bad. And further afield than that? Okay, where are you from, sir? From Brazil? From New Zealand? Wow, you win the I've come the furthest for a web conference award. You could just have waited till September to go to Sydney. Ooh. So that led me on to this whole kind of fascination about the little differences that I see in other aspects of design, but I didn't think when I was starting off on this particular adventure that I saw on the web. So I want to ask a couple of questions of the audience. Really, when we look around the globe, when we look at designs from around the web, from all sorts of different places, what is it that we see? And I'm not really concerned in those differences in terms of perhaps functionality or perhaps especially the way we do things. But really, as a visual designer, I'm really interested in the differences of the actual visual interface and some of those little stylistic differences that we might see. So really, it is about what we see. So what do we see? Do we see a really nice, rich diversity of different design cultures, do you think? Do we see that there are designs from different regions that each bring their own unique flavor to the web? I don't know. That's a question for you. Of course, it's not just about people living in their own culture, perhaps where their origins are. You know, we live in a multicultural world now. So what do we see? Do we see a really rich cultural melting pot where all of these design influences and inspiration all combine together to form some really exciting stuff for the web? Or, as I really suspected when I started off on this, do we just see like a dull, bland Ford Mondeo uniformity, where, you know, we have got this globalized view of what a website should look like or how a website should be designed. So those are the questions. Who here was in Richard Ishida's presentation from yesterday? Okay, a few, because there are one or two kind of crossovers from what Richard was talking about. And I love coming to conferences like this because none of the speakers really collaborate at the beginning, and yet there are these little common threads that weave their way through different presentations, all kind of by accident. And one of the things that Richard was doing in his presentation was he was looking at his definition of a couple of particular terms. The first term that he was concerned about was, particularly as he works at the W3C, on the internationalization side, is the definition of internationalization. Now, Richard views it in one particular way, which is that you need to design a platform that can then be flexible and easily modified by people in their local region. So I'm going to redefine the terms, actually. I'd like to redefine internationalization as in designing regional and cultural variations, but without having to change the underlying platform or the underlying structure of perhaps the engineering that underpins it. And in terms of localization to me is far more than just translation. I was interested in catching a bit of Hannah's last FM presentation earlier on. Who was in that? It was a fairly full room. Are you here, Hannah? No, that's good. Hannah was talking about the process of translating Last FM into Japanese and then into some other languages and the way that that particular product is rolled out. I'm going to redefine what Richard talks about in terms of localization, which is actually to create a design for a specific culture or a specific region, so that not only people can use it, you know, there's this real focus on, you know, something which is usable, getting from A to B. But, you know, what happens between A and B? Well, that's the user experience, and it's just as important as the two end points. But most importantly, it's about designing something that people are going to want to use, because it's okay being able to use something, but actually wanting to use it is a different matter. And that's really our job as designers, is to make something that people love to use and want to use and integrate into their lifestyle. If we do that, then we've been a success. But the other term I want to bring into this is globalization, because that's something which has been talked about a lot in terms of, you know, economics and politics. And really in terms of, for example, globalizing the auto industry. Well, to me, that's a very sad state of affairs. The fact that, you know, I don't think there's one now British car company that's, like, not owned by some foreign entity. Yeah. Sorry? Oh, apart from TVR, thank you very much. Yeah, if I really want to buy an unreliable sports car, I know where to go. I find this whole notion, you know, not only very sad, but also very dangerous. And it's from a political standpoint and also from an aesthetic and a design standpoint, I think it's something that we may need to reconsider as we move through this. So this whole notion of culture, this whole notion of different cultures and how they work and what they like to do and want to do, it's not a new discussion. And particularly when we look at academic circles, we can find people like this attractive gentleman, Hert Hofstede, who is very well known for breaking down cultural differences at an academic level into his five dimensions of culture. And, you know, they include some more kind of obvious things, but some kind of subtle things as well. So, you know, individualism versus collectivism. And, of course, my particular favorite, uncertainty avoidance. Whether or not we can break down culture into five kind of measurable steps has been a subject for lots of academics to debate. And we're going to see some little snippets of some of the stuff that I've found relating to this subject. But I've got to say that, you know, I'm not an academic, thankfully. I'm certainly not a scholar, apart from having drunk that lager a few times. I'm a visual designer. That's what I do for a living. That's what I make money doing. That's what allows me to not buy expensive sports cars, but to kind of pay plumbers and window cleaners and that kind of thing. That's what I do for a living. And because I'm a designer that works on the web, kind of by default, I design stuff that can, if we accept the definition, reach a global audience. And I think that that counts for everybody really now. You know, we all work in a medium which could be counted as a global reach medium. And are we really qualified to do that? Well, I've got a confession to make, because I'm not. And one of the things that I've learned throughout this process of putting the talk together is that I've got a huge amount to learn about different things. And I hope that everybody else has too. Because one of the things that I've learned is that, and realized about myself, is that I am a product of my own upbringing. I'm a product of my education. I am a product of the environment in which I grew up. I'm a product of my own social and political, and I have to confess, to some degree, racial stereotypes. We are all products of our environment, and it's very, very difficult sometimes to understand what goes outside of those particular stereotypes. You know, I'm 42 years old now, and I grew up, my mother's generation was the first generation that took package holidays abroad. So over on the right-hand side, there's me in, I think, 1972, on our first holiday to Ibiza. And this was at a stage where, you know, we didn't really understand what went on, and we got a kind of picture postcard stereotypical view of what abroad was like. Today, things are really different. Or are they? But, you know, I'm interested in these things, and I get to travel a lot more than I used to. So I wanted, and I'm very keen on the idea of, you know, learning about different cultures and, you know, trying to participate. I mean, as an Englishman, you know, I'm bloody hopeless at foreign languages. So I decided a couple of years ago that I wanted to learn Russian. You know, because it's easy, obviously. It's just like French. So, you know, having got the Linguaphone tapes and the Learn Russian in 24 Days kind of books, I came away with one phrase and two really important words that I learned. This is one of them. Any Russian speakers in the audience? Okay, if you can just leave the room for 10 minutes, that'd be great. This is my favorite, one of my favorite two words. This is, please correct my pronunciation, pogranichnik, da. That's the third word. Pogranichnik, that's, it's just kind of a James Bond villain word. It's fantastic, pogranichnik. But it actually means border guard. This is my second word. Anybody know what this says apart from the Russian speakers? This is one for you, gents. This is one for wooing the ladies. If you want to woo a Russian lady, this is marozhene. Which is great. Say this next time you meet a Russian lady. It means ice cream. But those are two of my favorite Russian words. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, everybody is a product of their own upbringing and their own prejudices. So what qualifies us to design for a global audience? That's an interesting question. This is the website of the Islamic Cultural Foundation. I'm fascinated by this design, and I really like the way that, you know, there are these things that I find to be quintessentially Islamic-y about the design. But am I looking at that through this kind of postcard stereotypical view? Or is it truly reflective of Islamic design for the web? And if it is, what sites are being developed in the Islamic nations? That's something which I think we need to look more about. This is the best South African weblog voted from last year from an African audience. There are elements of that that say Africa to me, but I've never been there, I've never experienced the culture. I might have seen Zulu a few times, but that really, you know, doesn't give me much of an impression. And this is the best African entertainment blog. Now that's different, because there are little elements in there, but to me, you know, it's not doesn't look terribly African. Now, maybe it does to an African, maybe it doesn't. I'm not really qualified to make that kind of distinction. But it is fascinating to actually have a look at what is going on. And there is this website which is called Afrigator. All of the links will be up on the website at the end. But this is Afrigator.com, which is kind of like an aggregator of African weblogs from all sorts of different countries, you know, Malawi and places that we wouldn't generally look at in terms of, you know, inspiration for web design. So the question is this shit important? I don't know. Does anybody think this is important, or am I just barking up the wrong tree with it? Well, I don't think I am, and there are some kind of dry, sandal-wearing, bearded academics, perhaps, that might agree with me, and they've been talking about this stuff for a little while. This is part of a report that was actually written in 1998. Culturability, the merging of culture and usability. Of course, usability is a subject that's become much, much more important and much more discussed over recent years. So as a consequence of existing international World Wide Web users and anticipation of future users, if we think about perhaps emerging nations or huge nations like China, usability takes on an immediate and relevant cultural context. Does it? An immediate and relevant cultural context. This was 1998. So we would think that big brands, big multinationals, companies with enormous resources and global reach would be looking at this in more detail. So do they? Well, let's just take a hit at some low-hanging fruit. Let's start off with perhaps what we might think of as a real internet success story in terms of Amazon. Well, if we compare, for example, what goes on Amazon.com to .co.uk, I wouldn't expect that we would see too many differences. If we go to France, well, we've got the Channel Tunnel now, and you know, we all go to buy cheap fags and booze in France, so again, I don't think there's too much of a difference. But what about Japan? I'm not seeing particularly a distinctive style for Amazon Japan. Are you telling me that the Japanese don't buy things in a different way than we do? Even from my limited experience of traveling. You know, the actual experience of shopping, whether it's, you know, in a market or in a store, is very different in different places that I've been. So the conventions that we seem to have now become comfortable with in terms of web design, are they really appropriate for a global audience? Here's another low-hanging fruit. The world's local bank. Actually, this is very interesting, because when I was on my way back from San Francisco at the airport, the HSBC at Heathrow, they've got all these posters up for, I think it's yourpointofview.com or something like that, where they look at the differences of different cultures, and, you know, what age means, whether it means, you know, old or wise, those kind of little subtle differences. So as far as their marketing is concerned, HSBC, you would think, would be, you know, very, very into this whole idea of regional differences. But as we move across, this is HSB in Hong Kong, which is kind of to the source. It's not really much apparent. This is Thailand. Until we get to actual China, where we see anything that's remotely different in terms of visual design. Just one interesting anecdote. I was in New York a few months ago, and my HSBC MasterCard stopped working in the Apple store. And I knew I'd paid the bill. So I went into the HSBC just around the corner on Fifth Avenue and said to the lady behind the counter, "My MasterCard doesn't work. Can you check it out for me?" And she said, "Well, I'm sorry, you're a British customer. I can't check your account from America. But if you go to the back of the room, there's a phone there. You can phone the number, and they will sort it out for you." And I said, fine. So I went and punched the number in on the back of the card and got through to this person. I said, "Where am I speaking to you from?" She said, "Malaysia." So how do we do? What about other global reach brands? What about AOL? Are AOL playing it safe with their rather kind of diluted blue? If we move from the main AOL.com to something like Japan, well, there are some differences. There's a lot of corporate branding going on. But again, we do start to see a little bit of difference in terms of some of the graphical elements and typography. We'll have a look at that a bit later. By the end of the session, anybody that's not employed by Yahoo will be employed by Yahoo. They're collective. Is there anybody here from Yahoo? Yeah, a couple of people at the back. This was an interesting one, because I do actually now know, having spoken to a few people, some of the different influences that go into the reasons why design decisions are made in different regions. But Yahoo is an interesting one for several reasons, and we're going to keep returning to Yahoo throughout the talk. This is the main Yahoo homepage. And again, if we move over to, this is Singapore, and then we look at a broad selection from Brazil to France and the UK and Hong Kong. Again, lots and lots of similarities in terms of the way that the actual structure of the pages are made, but also very, very little in the way of actual regional variations. Now, there are reasons for this. There are infrastructure reasons for this, where the same platform perhaps is rolled out to different regions. Perhaps it's controlled, as Last.fm is, via the mothership and pushed out for localization across different regions. But I wonder sometimes whether or not that's perhaps not the way to go. If we go through to Japan, well, yeah, we do start to see some differences there, but the differences are more economic than they are design-led. For example, Yahoo in Japan, which is one of their, you know, the most important assets, is actually running on a completely different platform from what comes out of America. I think it's actually working, Steve. Is it on an older platform? So that's, yeah, so they're running on a different platform to what's going on in the West. But that's not to say that that there aren't these variations as we go further east. Now, this is Korea, and we're starting to see some very different things coming out of Korea here. But if we move over to, for example, this one is Taiwan, are we starting to see something which may be demonstrating to us a lot more of those kind of differences in the way that layouts are done, not just in terms of the character sets that are used, but perhaps some of that different, more Eastern design coming into things. But it's even when we come sort of further towards home, you know, we do see little differences in the way that the iconography of Yahoo is maintained. So, for example, you know, we obviously in France they must not use they must not eat popcorn in movie theatres. So, you know, their icon for cinema is different to what we have here, or different to what we have in the States. But it's not so much these little differences that are important. It's the reasons why these things might happen. So again, if we come back to Taiwan, and then we move a little further. Now, this is Korea, because it's very easy to look at, for example, the Yahoo homepage, which one would imagine would be, have this kind of corporate brand. But what happens when we actually go under the hood and we start looking at some of their internal properties? And when we start to see things like kids here from Korea, then all of a sudden it seems to me as if the designers in that area are then able, they're given much more free rein to, you know, go to town and to bring their own cultural flavors to a Yahoo property. So it is possible within a corporate framework. But what about other sites? What about sites that are not generally just designed to be, you know, a global mass market product? If we look at what companies are actually doing within their, for their own audiences, so Pokemon for Japan rather than Pokemon for us, and then we look at things that are away from the mainstream brands that we might have heard of, and even into brands that we have heard of. You know, I'm a great big fan of using illustrations on the web, but if you compare Honda Japan to Honda.com or the European Honda properties, it's a very, very different experience indeed. But back onto the subject of e-commerce, you know, what happens when we actually get away from the big brand experience? And we're going to come back to that in a little while. So not being an academic, what I decided to do was I decided to actually speak to designers in different regions. And over the course of a few months, I think I emailed around about 400 different people and got a lot of feedback from different designers working in different countries. And I asked a series of questions which I've condensed into kind of three main questions here. So the first being, do you think that your region or country has a distinctive design style, and if so, what is it? And I had a variety of different comments come back, some of which I thought, yeah, okay, I can see that. And others I was very surprised or even disappointed at. So Roger Johansson, who is somebody that I respect a great deal, doesn't think that his country of Sweden has a distinctive style. Interesting. Far better, I think, to talk to people within and ask their own opinions. Neil Telford, are you here from the UK? No? I think web design is fairly uniform country to country. Web design doesn't change much from country to country. The medium constrains the designer. Interesting. That does come from an American. I don't feel that in Croatia we have a locally distinctive design style. Now, Croatia to me, correct me if there's anybody from Croatia here, is a country which over the last few hundred years has had a tremendous amount of cultural and political history. So one would expect that it has lots of stuff going on and lots of influences. So to hear that people in Croatia don't think, or this designer in Croatia doesn't think that there's a particularly distinctive style, is surprising. But when I looked at some of the sites that Croatian designers suggested that I went to see, I could see something which to me, through my picture postcard stereotypical view, did have that kind of mid-European quality to them. But there were people that had stronger opinions. We were early with the very clean designs, which remind us of the Scandinavian tradition, says Eric in Sweden. Now, clean design is something that, you know, we often try to strive for wherever we are. But it is something that, you know, we might associate particularly with that kind of Scandinavian style. And Dutch designers, talking about art, you know, art and artistic influences are something that I'm particularly passionate about. And actually seeing designers talking about the fact that art within their region does influence their design is something which, you know, I was very pleased to actually hear. So this is a design from Germany. Now, we might look at that and think that it was the sort of thing that we might have done in like 96, 97. You know, it's not usable web design. But, you know, does that matter? And when we go further afield, we start to see why some of these things become important. So in Japan, because of the way that they lay out the type on their pages, there's a mixture of horizontal and vertical layouts, and these things can go to produce some, you know, incredibly interesting different designs. So looking at designs that you might not see within the mainstream, but actually digging into local cultural stuff, is extremely illuminating. But it goes to show some of the reasons why these things happen when you talk to designers. Now, we'd like to think, or we might think that Japanese designers, for example, they use a lot more kind of cutesy characters and glossy colours than we do over here. These elements are what we might stereotypically think of as Far Eastern design. But why does that happen? Well, one of the interesting things that I found through talking to people was that a lot of these design decisions come about because of the limitations of the web. So because of the lack of typographic controls of Japanese characters in HTML or CSS, they will typically embed a lot more text in images. And that then lends itself to this much more graphical style. I find this whole thing fascinating. So if we look at some of this stuff, the way that they will use pictograms, the way that they will use illustration in very much a two-dimensional way, is very, very interesting to me. But interestingly, there are some technical issues as well which come up. And one of the things that I just hadn't even considered was that perhaps people interact with web pages in completely different ways. So this particular designer, this is Yasuhisu from Japan, was telling me that the Japanese interact with a web page in a completely different way than perhaps we will. So they find it much more almost respectful to read the content and then be given the choice of what to do at the bottom, which is something that we just don't do generally in the West. We want to give people, you know, quick and easy access to get done what they want to do. So we just don't think about how that may impact on, let's say, a Japanese audience. So this is a financial site. And this page is from a particular financial or mortgage product. But if we actually look at this and we scroll down, none of this stuff is actionable until we get to the bottom. So we have to go down 4,000 or 5,000 pixels before we actually get to the, you know, yes, I want to buy this product button. Imagine doing that over here. Users tend not to scroll, or prefer not to scroll, is what we're always told. Let's take this site, which is a very popular and successful Japanese e-commerce site, and look at this particular product, whatever they are, necklaces or something. None of this stuff is actionable until we get down to the bottom. So interacting with web pages in different ways is something which I think is something that we need to consider. We can't always assume that the Amazon model for e-commerce is correct, that the Amazon model for interacting with web-based elements is correct in every culture. And yet we think that it is. We think that it's just a matter of translation. So I ask another question, which gets to the root of things. Do you think that web designers in your country looked at local culture when they're designing for the web? And I got some very interesting results. People confirming what I thought, really, that it is much more than just translating text. And people saying, yeah, I can learn a lot by watching TV and seeing the magazines that people read. And this, of course, goes back to what John Hicks was talking about early on in terms of design inspiration. But going back to my Russian example, you know, Russia as a nation, I feel, is, and I've read, is struggling with its own national identity. You know, even right before Soviet times, there wasn't really a Russia. And it's only been in the last 20-odd years that Russian people are coming to terms with what it is to be Russian. And I find that terrifically exciting. And yet, why, for example, are a nation with enormous potential to give us distinctive stuff for the web looking to the West for what they should be doing on the web? But there are some distinctive things. This is kuk.ru. I think kuk means how in Russian, doesn't it, Richard? This is another site. This is kuk.ru as well. This is absolutely wonderful. Check this out when you can get some broadband and a pair of sunglasses. The thing about this site is that every time you refresh the page, you get a different animated background. Now, you could say, yeah, but we gave up doing that stuff 10 years ago because, you know, our users don't like it. But isn't it not interesting to experiment with this kind of stuff? And isn't it fascinating and inspirational to see other people doing this stuff? Because, you know, it's all very easy for us to say, yeah, we know users don't tend to scroll and we understand the Jakob Nielsen conventions for web design. But actually, you know, 10 years into the web, have we really learned everything that there is to learn? There are people out there that can perhaps teach us a great deal. But there's some enormously worrying stuff as well. Most of modern local culture is a copy of the American one. Isn't that sad? I have some interesting things here. Some people didn't agree with me entirely. I think that sites are tailored to a particular market rather than a particular cultural style. That's a very interesting distinction. And it's posters, magazine, and TV that are a source of inspiration. So when we look at different styles, this is from Finland or across to Germany, are we seeing things that are, you know, Teutonic, crisp, precise, BMW-like? Or are we seeing things that much more reflect that kind of openness? So I said, well, I asked, do you think that web designers look to the wider web and well-known sites for inspiration? And this is where things became particularly interesting. Because there were some people that said, yeah, despite the differences, we can learn from each other and find a next step for the next web design innovation. And I find that to be a very kind of inspirational approach to the whole topic. But there were other people that contradicted that completely. This was a lady from France. We still think that the USA is ahead of us, perhaps a post-World War II occupation, since they brought us chewing gum, Coke, and French letters. That was all the Americans did for the French, obviously. In a way, it's still true on the web. I find that very, very, very sad. But going back to the Croatia example, young people in Croatia are now under the cultural influences of Western popular culture, mostly via TV shows. And this reflects on web design. Am I the only person that finds that very sad? As almost all cultural influences come from the West, so design for the web is no different. But the web is fundamentally, or can be, you know, a big source of inspiration. And it's not just from the web that we can be looking to see whether or not there are things that we can learn from other cultures, and how other cultures can perhaps grow in their own right. Does anybody here read comic books? Comics? Yeah, a few kind of comic fans. Very interesting subject of comics, actually, because, you know, a lot of times we talk about art, and we talk about the differences in kind of artistic movements that happen over the years and across different regions. But you say, okay, that's art, that's not the real world, that's not design, it's not business. But there are commercial mediums where this kind of, I don't know, diversity, this kind of evolution in different directions has become very, very interesting. And comics, to me, really typify a lot of that. So comics are interesting in terms of the Japanese angle, in that, you know, they were obviously originally an American, you know, commercial invention. But when they were introduced into Japan during the Second World War, they were then just left there to evolve some of their own conventions and some of their own methodologies. So, for example, when we go to sleep in a comic, what do we see on the page? You see the little Zs, yeah? But in Japan, that doesn't happen. In Japan, we have little bubbles as if you're kind of asleep underwater. And the way that the pages are laid out, the fact that the direction of reading is from right to left in Japanese comics, the way that the designers have actually laid out the pages so that bubbles and other items spread across panels to panels, if you then read manga translations or other comic translations, you find that it just doesn't work, because they've obviously had to reverse the artwork and then just translate the text. Things are not quite the same. Translation really doesn't work a lot of the time. But we had a resurgence in British comics in the 1970s when I started reading 2000 AD. Does everyone remember that? I think, did they still make it? And what we saw there was we saw British artists, people like Mike McMahon, who really did a lot of work on Judge Dredd, really, you know, taking everything that he'd learned up until that point, looking at different styles. There was a lot of kind of Japanese stuff coming in, looking at a lot of the classic American art, and then making something which was, for a very long time, a very quintessentially British type of comic book. And I think there's an enormous amount that we can learn from comic books, as comic books have learned from other media. So this is my favourite comic of all time. Anybody read this? Yeah, this is Paul Chadwick's Concrete. Actually, a lot of the stuff's out of print, but just get onto Amazon or something and try to find this stuff, because it's absolutely beautiful. And there's a lot that's been learned in comics from other mediums. And if we look at, you know, what actually is comic art these days, we'll find that it's not typically what we would expect a comic book maybe to look at. And there's been an enormous amount that comic books have learned from other medium, particularly when it comes to cinema. So we've seen comics being inspired by cinema, and now we're seeing cinema perhaps being inspired by comics. Not just, you know, your big blockbuster Spider-Man movies, but if you look at something like Sin City, you know, where the director has actually tried to, you know, really get into that comic essence. It's not, you know, it's not so much a pastiche, it's much more of an homage to that whole medium. And it creates something which, to my eyes, was something completely different, something that I really hadn't seen actually on screen before. And if you look at that, some of the things that comics do and why they do them. It was only recently, I was in the Comic Arts Museum in San Francisco a couple of weeks ago, and there was a panel there by Will Eisner, who created The Spirit, amongst other things. And the way that the pages were laid out on this particular panel were absolutely fascinating. Because, and this is an example from Concrete, which really takes this a stage further, is that at the top of the page, we've got these little tiny panels. And you devote a certain amount of time to looking at each panel. And the smaller the panel, the less time you spend. So the dramatic impact is the great big full-width panel at the bottom of the screen. Can we learn anything from this and bring this onto the web? Can we prioritize our content in a similar way? So if we think about the ways that comics can influence us, and we think about the ways that comics have survived and grown a lot of different regional variations, I think we can say that it can happen on the web. So we need to ask why. So going back to some of this academic material that I found, some interesting quotes. This was a passage from the Database for Advances in Information Systems, typically my favorite read, from 2001. I won't bore you with the whole thing. But in 2001, the current homogeneous website blueprint should change. And a single, universally appealing global site does not appear feasible. Well, that goes contrary to a lot of the stuff that we've found. Now, maybe some companies are handling it in different ways. Maybe mass personalization is one way that things can go for big brands. It's certainly perhaps the way that Amazon is taking it. But there's some very fascinating stuff to be found, and I will have links to all of this kind of stuff on my website. But when we come to look at in detail at some of the things that were said way back then, that culture and usability intertwine into a single entity, which was defined as culturability, where cultural preferences and biases affect the degree of user-friendliness on an interface. Wow. Something new. Something where culture and regional differences drive the differences in the interfaces that we create for different regions. And interestingly, it comes back now, I think, to where we look for inspiration on the web. Because it's all very well me standing up here and saying, you know, yeah, everybody should, you know, be doing their own thing. We need to see this kind of diversity. But, you know, am I, what gives me the right to say that? When, from what I gather and from what I read, so many designers in different countries are almost aspiring to what we do. Yeah, they're looking at the successful Western brands and thinking, that's what I need to emulate. And, you know, in terms of Japan, 60% of Japanese users will set Yahoo as their homepage. Does anybody else find that actually quite a scary thought? So really, the big question again is, you know, is this stuff important? And I think that it is important, and I think that it's important for a whole variety of different reasons. And I think that we need to reevaluate exactly what it is that we're doing when we're designing for the web. Because, you know, if I design something and just expect that it is going to be usable by everybody, then I think that I'm being pretty deluded. I think that as a business owner, as a owner or a marketer or a manager of a big brand, I think that it's the ultimate in arrogance just to expect that you can take one interface and just translate it or, you know, have the little tweaks done in different countries. I think that Richard's model in terms of internationalization versus localization is something which is really does need to be turned on its head, because it leads us down the road that we produce one global thing, perhaps, in the same model that Last.fm were talking about earlier on, and then just make these minor tweaks. Yeah, we'll roll out the Japanese version next week. I think that that whole model is broken. And I think that what we need to do is we need to move to a completely different model in terms of the way that we design for the web. And I think that it needs to come back to this whole idea of culturalization, where we design a website or web application that encompasses regional variations, but we do it at a regional level. And if I'm designing Last.fm or I'm designing another big brand, what gives me the right to sit in, you know, my studio or to sit in a startup or a big multinational in the Silicon Valley and say, this is what we're going to roll out to the world? That, to me, isn't internationalization. It isn't localization. It's almost not culturalization. I think it's arrogant, and I think it's imperialism. So what I would want to do, and I would want you to take away perhaps from this presentation, is to think about what it is that you're doing when you're talking about designing something for a global reach. And perhaps what we should be doing is we should be involving designers from all around the world when we're designing for their region. And we should be involving designers at a local level in making those critical decisions. Because above all, if you live in some region, or you have that particular perspective, you're much more qualified to make that decision than I am. So, with that, thank you very much. We have 5 or so minutes for Q&A, if anybody's got anything they want to throw at me. Any questions from anybody?
Do Eastern countries have the same emphasis on accessibility, and does this affect the design?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question for me?
Sorry. Do Eastern countries have the same emphasis on accessibility, and does this affect the design?
Ooh, that's an interesting question. Do different countries have the same emphasis on accessibility, and does it affect design? I'm certainly not qualified to answer that question. I think that in general, web accessibility is only really a topic that we've been, you know, concerned enough about, you know, in more developed, so to speak, parts of the world, where we've been maybe working on the web for longer. We've got a long way to go in our own backyard to increase and do better with accessibility. So I don't think we can be critical of what's going on anywhere else in the world until we get our own house in order. Anybody else? There's running orange people.
Sort of an observation, perhaps inspired by what you've been saying, but I'm interested in your thoughts, that in many ways what you're highlighting here isn't just a web design issue, but it's a wider branding design issue, and particularly when you put up those shots of those global brands of HSBC and Honda, there's that, you know, the HSBC strategy, presumably at a very high level, is we will develop a homogenous global brand. And I think when you finished right off at the end saying there's an arrogance and an imperialism to it, there's that centralized control. And, you know, the couple of times I've had very lightweight dealings with sort of big corporations like that, there's a feeling of that design is actually gets dictated from on high as part of a whole high-level executive. We want to control our whole company around the globe and make it one thing. And in many ways what we're talking about is that these global companies need both a more sophisticated strategy and a sort of more sophisticated brand strategy that says it is permissible to have differences in our company around the globe, and we don't need to have this central rubber stamping, you must all be the same.
Yeah, I think that's a very interesting question. I think really what gets to the heart of that is, you know, what is your brand? And to me, brand is much more than just, you know, the colours that you choose and the style of your logo. It's much more about the experience that somebody has in dealing with your website or dealing with your company in whatever form. And I think in those terms, cultural and regional diversity has to come into things. I think that one of the interesting things that I find is that we look at certain sites and we say, right, this is obviously a successful global brand. We need to emulate that, or we want to emulate that because we want to emulate that success. And whether or not that organization comes from here, or it comes from Silicon Valley, or it comes from wherever, we look at that and we think, yeah, that's what we're going to aspire to, that's what we're going to try to recreate. And one of the sad things, I think, is that, you know, the more times you photocopy a photocopy, the more faded it gets. And I really do feel that we need to, you know, take stock of that. Because, you know, the brand is very, very important. But it's also what goes on at the local level, I think, which is, you know, as important. Because if we don't feed what comes in from underneath, then what comes out at the top is going to be far less rich. And I think in terms of, you know, putting an organic kind of biological kind of twist to it, if we think about, you know, biodiversity, and we think about, you know, if we only end up with one strain of potato that is like, you know, the super feed the world potato, what happens after several generations when we have a potato famine? You know, we don't have that rich genetic diversity which is going to, you know, save the potato. And, you know, are we in danger of doing that on the web for the sake of maintaining, you know, a global brand, so to speak? I think there's a big danger in that. Gentleman over there.
Not actually a gentleman, sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, I've got my contact lenses in the wrong way around.
That's right. I just wanted to kind of make a comment about the whole global brand thing, because, you know, I do accessibility and I went to...
Is that you, Anne?
Yes, it is.
Hello.
Hi. I went to do a workshop with a client yesterday, and they're a very large corporate client, and they have a number of international sites, and I was quite interested to hear them talk about how they dealt with localization and internationalization, because they are in the process of rolling out sites to all the world markets. They've got the European sites going out, they've got places like Taiwan, Japan, and what they actually did was they looked at cultural differences but kept it within the brand. So they kept the brand and they had basic brand guidelines, but they were also looking at cultural variations and cultural diversity and what that would mean for their site.
So my question to you on that then is, who is going to do the end work? Was it going to be done at your client's end, or was it going to be done by people in the local area?
It was being done by people in the local area rather than by people in the UK or in America. It was actually being done in the countries.
That's a very enlightened point of view.
I was really surprised. But just in light of what you've been saying here today and the kind of, you know, overarching most brands do their whole one brand and no diversity thing, I just thought that was really enlightened of them, and I just kind of wanted to mention it.
I'd really be interested in, if you can at some point, just let me know about that.
Okay.
I think that's a really interesting kind of addendum to the whole thing. Steve, at the back.
I was just going to say, following on very nicely from what Anne said, at Yahoo we have obviously the central design team over in America who do things like set core brand guidelines and that sort of thing. And then we actually have in each of the major properties across the world, sort of, for example, Europe, Korea, Japan, Australia, those sorts of areas, will then have their own local design teams. So, for example, in Europe we have a design team that's made up of, I think the head is a guy from France, they have Germans, they have Brits, they have people from, I think, Spain and Italy as well. all doing, you know, all interacting and collaborating with one another, and then feeding back to the US and feeding over to you know, one degree or other, the other sort of international areas. And so that, you know, that kind of...
Yahoo are doing some great stuff, actually. And, you know, I can in an hour, I can only kind of touch on a few kind of broad brushstrokes, but I would encourage everybody to, you know, to go to... If you, you know, it's a bit of a mystery tour if you don't speak, you know, Taiwanese or Korean, or can read it. But actually just go into some of those, you know, from the homepage, go into some of those other properties from Yahoo and actually see what are going on at a different level. It's absolutely fascinating. And there is some really good stuff coming out of those places from Yahoo. And it's often not incumbent, it's not often shackled by the global Yahoo machine. It appears to be quite flexible in a lot of different places.
Yeah, this is exactly it. I mean, we have, I think there's like core brand guidelines, very much like Anne was saying for her client yesterday, which are quite minimal. And then they have, as I say, sort of more overarching things which are informed by all of, you know, people from around the world.
And what's really interesting to me is that the work is going on at a local level. It's not going on in Silicon Valley and then just being rolled out. You know, it's actually being done by people on the ground in different places, and I think that's, you know, that's really the route that we need to be taking. I think we've got time for one more 30-seconder. Gentleman just here.
Do you think part of the problem is also to do with the technology? Because if you think about the HTML and CSS that frames a lot of our sites, essentially they're English. So everything we use is English. There's no, sort of, as far as I'm aware, there's no sort of Taiwanese CSS. So you the people who code, and when I was doing my MSc, I was with a lot of Chinese students, they all had to have a very good level of English. And so when they're actually framing their pages and thinking about design layout, essentially they're moving into an English mode of thought in a lot of ways. I just wonder if you had any views on that.
I think HTML and CSS are just limiting to everybody. You know, it just wasn't designed right. It just wasn't anticipated that we would do the crazy stuff that we're doing with it. And, you know, taking a core document which is, you know, meaningful and accessible is difficult enough. But when we start to bring in all of this other stuff, you know, it really wasn't designed for doing the type of stuff that we want to do. So what we do is we twist it. You know, we use floats for layout, we use positioning for things that it wasn't designed to do in CSS, and we jump through hoops and, you know, make the best out of a bad lot, really, a lot of the time. And I don't envy people in Japan or other parts of the Far East that have much greater limitations because of their character sets in having to jump through even more hoops to make the same old dated technologies suit their needs. So, yeah, I think you're absolutely right, but I think we have a lot of those issues here as well. So, with that, I'm 1 minute and 8 seconds over budget, so thank you very, very much.